Hello, I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and co-host of the podcast Just Between Us.
What a coincidence. I'm Gabe S. Dunn. I'm a writer, bisexual icon, wink, and I'm also the co-host of this show.
Just Between Us is a variety show where we interview fascinating people, play a ridiculous game called Hypotheticals, and talk about things that affect everyone or maybe sometimes just me.
We also do a show called Too Long, Did Read It, which is a show where we scour the depths of Reddit to find the weirdest, kookiest, most upsetting posts and then give our opinions.
So if you're looking for a new show to check out that goes from silly to serious in the same episode, often multiple times,
back and forth from each of us,
you can check out the Just Between Us feed where we have over 200 episodes waiting just for you.
200 episodes?
I know, we've been doing this a long time.
And it were very funny.
Okay.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Emily is zooming down the highway on her way here right now. She'll be here momentarily.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. I do hope, while you're hanging around, you hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, so if you like this one, there's plenty more on the way as well. You get a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artist and discover some new ones. You can do so at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, Red Circle, Audible, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me, I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, talking with Emily Hines and James Shaw of the band Metric. We're going to be discussing their brand new record, Formentera. It's the band's eighth album, and we're going to get into how they used a travel book as a ways to escape during lockdown, inevitably influencing the journey within the songs, learning that they're not in total control and finding the ways of letting go, and creating the epic doom scroller. James is also going to tell us about taking some inspiration from Johnny Marr, while Emily recounts the time, their time with composer Howard Shore, and if they plan to do any more film scores in the future. So let's get into it. We're talking Formentera. It's Kyle Meredith with Metric.
Hi.
It's great to see you both. You've got a brand new album. Formentera? Am I saying that right?
Formentera.
Formentera. I missed the R.
You need it in there.
You got to have it in there. Every time you all put out a record, I'm blown away by it. And this is no different right here. It's such kind of an amazing journey that you're taking us on throughout this. I don't know. To me as a listener, it almost sounds like it has a big story arc to it. Do you find that there are puzzles that you're trying to solve while you're doing an album like this?
Yeah, I mean, it starts as like nothing, and then it turns into like the biggest, widest painting of everything, and then it gets cut into a million puzzle pieces, and then it gets completely scrambled and we have to put it all back together. So yeah, I like the puzzle metaphor. That works. I mean, it was like, you know, there was a point in 2020, early 2021, where we were making this music and we were kind of thinking to ourselves like, you know, maybe we should be not focusing on like making a pandemic record and like, how can we make it not a pandemic record and an end of a, you know, a return to normal kind of record and blah, blah, blah. And then it kind of turned into, okay, there's no such thing as a not pandemic anything. Like, you have a sandwich now and it's a pandemic sandwich. You know? It's like it affected every single part of the entire planet and everyone's ethos and being and thought process. So yeah, we were just trying to deal with the reality of planet Earth, you know, for the last couple of years. And there's no way it wasn't going to make it into all the music.
Emily, for you, what is the story that you end up wanting to tell on this record and maybe to what destination?
Well, I think, you know, we're big believers in album sequence, minor obsession, second only to set list sequence. But so, you know, we really advocate that you should definitely listen to the album in the sequence that we put it together. I think that Adele moment was huge when she, you know, got the shuffle turned off as the default on Spotify. But so in this case, it's really a matter of like stacking up the tension and anxiety at the beginning of the album. So certainly like the beginning of Doomscroller, we're just going right in and trying to address a lot of these like unarticulated emotions and the confusion and isolation of the time that we've just been in. But as you move through the album, you know, the first three tracks, it's really addressing all those things. And then you get sort of washed into Formentera with the Budapest Orchestra taking you away into this sort of mental getaway. You know, if you can't physically go, which was really the inspiration, you know, I should show you the book. I have it right here. But like, it was the idea that we can't physically escape, but we can go to a place in our minds. I'm going to get the book.
Get the book.
When we were making this record, we were like, we had this that coffee table in the control room on the other side of those panels. And we had this book open that was like these destinations that you could go, you know, dream destinations kind of thing. But like in a more sort of beautiful coffee table way than like, you know, Travel and Leisure magazine.
1001 escapes to make before you die.
Right. And we opened it on day one to this page.
Well, because the idea was we were really in the, like, you know, lockdown was hard for everyone, but in Canada, it was very intense because of, I think, the weather. For those of us who endured a cold climate during that time, I think it really heightened the sort of mental health problems. So there was a day when we were like, we're cracking up. Let's look in this book and see. We'll just, maybe every day we'll turn to a different page and we'll just in our minds be transported. And this is where we turn to. Is Formentera.
Beautiful.
And just the way it's described, it's just like, oh, the gentle lapping of the waters of the Mediterranean. Like, and then that day with this book open, I went to that piano there and Jimmy went with Liam to like the modular synthesis. They get the patches out to like express an emotion, you know, in that way. And the song was born in that moment. So later on, we discovered that was really the anchor and point of the album, because we're like sort of obsessed with usefulness, like the function of this record for people who want to listen to it is that ideally it gives you that sense of you can close your eyes and kind of be taken off to Formentera for a moment.
Yeah, and at that moment in the record there's like a point of release, you know, and a point of letting go. And I think one of the things that really happened to a lot of us over the last couple of years is that whether we liked it or not, we learned to let go of what we thought we were in control of in our lives. And we learned that we're not in control of very much. And in some ways, that can be a very peaceful feeling, you know, because once you get past the fear of it, it's actually an easier way to live, because the things that you thought you were in control of, you weren't anyway. It was a false sense. And there's a lot of freedom in the feeling of the loss of control, if you can get past the fear. And so the front half of the album is a lot about losing that sense and fearing it. And in the end of Formentera, there's a moment where you actually kind of let go, or more accurately, you bear witness to Emily letting go. And then the rest of the record really just kind of, you know, falls into a sense of freedom and exaltation and sort of an enlightenment, if you will, you know.
And you can feel it, like the sequencing, by the way, is so well laid out. It's so perfect on this journey for it to be an obsession. I can tell the care that's taken in there anyway. But that darkness at the beginning, I mean, that is when you open the door to this record and you walk into it and suddenly that's what you get from Doomscroller, you know. And I did start to think of, because I mean, yes, such an interesting term that I, you know, a lot of us are guilty of. And I started thinking, like, but hasn't that always been there? Even before the term, you know, as you're driving past the car wreck, you know, or whatever it is, like, we've sort of just dressed it up in different clothes. But I don't know, the animal that it's become, like, it feels like a different animal. I don't know what was going through your head while you were doing that, but it does feel like its own beast.
Yeah, I mean, that the creation of that song was really intriguing to me, that we ended up where we did, because you know, I could understand if someone thought maybe we went into it with a conceptual idea of we want to do this big epic piece, but it really wasn't that. It was just like very nose to the grindstone, and like we felt there was such clarity in the scope of emotion that needed to be conveyed. And the end kind of presented itself to us. Like, so the first part was a piece of music that Jimmy had composed with Liam that I had one of the most clear-headed writing experiences I've ever had on that track, where in the morning I was like, I hear it, I see it, I have it, I wrote it down, told Jimmy, just set up the mic when you come to the studio right away. And I recorded it, and that is the vocal that's on the album, you know, 2 years later. It's like April 2020 or something.
And set it up the studio, meaning like in Emily's house.
Yeah, my like downstairs floor. But, and then, you know, that whole part, like the QAnon and like all this imagery and the like you're in this visual space. And then I felt as though that needed to end with a sort of piano coda. So I composed this sort of short piece and presented that. And Jimmy was like, oh man, this is great. We got to expand this feeling. We need this idea of like, you take something for the pain, you know, the soothing of the pain comes from exposing it, not from suppressing it, which really is the through line on the album too, right? Is this idea like, that's how you feel better. It's not by hiding, it's by, you know, articulating. So it's like, oh man, we got to develop this part. And then it was like,
hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lowell Tullhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Like, there's this other feeling we want, and hence the idea of this huge, euphoric, like almost like Britpop guitar ending. And then we're like, yeah, okay. And then we're just kind of waiting, like, is there another section? Like, there could have been if we felt like it still was something needed to be handled. But we felt, you know, when you get to those last chords on the acoustic guitar and the little blips are kind of still there, which Pirellis was like, it's almost like the trolls are still there. We were like, okay, phew, it's done. And that's when we realized it was 10 and a half minutes long.
I mean, it sets you guys up for, you know, you want to do the rock opera. I mean, The Who started with a quick one, you know, as sort of a similar piece. So, you know, your Tommy could be just around the corner at this point.
It's true. Looks like Pinball Wizard. I ain't scared.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Kyle Meredith with Metric.
I like that you brought up Britpop too. Jimmy, I think you were talking in, I don't know, some interview online or maybe, but what feels like eternity, you said, leaning into your Johnny Marr moments right there.
I mean, he was like a huge reason that I started playing guitar. The way that I started playing guitar, you know, when I was young, I just, I moved to New York and I was living with a friend of mine who was obsessed with the Smiths. And we moved into this apartment. He had a futon and 4,000 records. And I think 2,000 of them were Smiths albums. And he just like, you know, pummeled the Smiths into my head. And I just became obsessed with the way Johnny would play. He had this unbelievable ability to do rhythm and lead at the same time. And he's kind of like the only guy that can do that. Like nobody else can do it. Keith kind of does it in his own way. But Johnny, it's just so incredibly melodic. And I became obsessed with playing guitar like that. And I've since sort of like gone other directions. But that one was really like, I have to throw a major ode to Johnny.
And you've met him.
I did meet him.
Because we played with him with Social Scene.
We did. We played in Manchester with him.
Which was one of the weirdest experiences of a song having multiple like lives. So Anthems for a 17-Year-Old Girl, which we wrote with Social Scene back, you know, 20 years ago now, played it in many different circumstances, but never could have imagined we would be playing it the day after that Ariana Grande terrorist attack in Manchester, right? And it was the Social Scene show was the next day. And it was one of those moments where they had to evaluate, you know, we don't have any role in the band in that way. We were just doing some gigs with them there and they're trying to evaluate the right thing to do respectfully, right? And in the end, the decision was made that they would play and they persuaded Johnny to join, Johnny Marr to join us on stage to play Anthems for a 17-Year-Old Girl, which had a completely different meaning in the context of this. It was so crazy. But seeing you and Johnny.
Kevin introduces me to out on the street, and he's like, Jimmy, Johnny. And I'm like, huge fan. It's like, okay, that's weird. And and then we go inside, and Kev's like, hey man, so we're going to open with Anthems. Jimmy, could you just show Johnny how to play it? And I'm like, okay, that's just the weirdest thing ever. So I pick up the guitar, Johnny picks up the guitar, and I hit the first chord, and Johnny goes, yeah, it's like this, like this, like this. And I'm like, yeah, I think you got it. And then the melody part, and he's like that. I'm like, yeah, what am I doing here?
He is so versatile. I've had him on the show a few times, and it's always like the best interview, because that knowledge is so deep. I mean, and now he's doing Bond themes, you know, it's anyway.
Great. Yeah. I just want him to win.
He's such a talented and such a lovely person.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the new Billie Eilish. That's him on the guitar on the Billie Eilish Bond thing.
No way. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
him and Hans Zimmer, you know, credit to Hans Zimmer as well. Okay. So
she's choosing her date wisely.
Yeah. Anyway, so you guys have got a record as well. So no, but there, you know, those moments on those musical moments, you know, talking about the title track, I mean, the bass and the keys and the way they're going on, and they're absolutely perfect. And the way the strings just become menacing by the end of it. Like what's going on, you know, visually there, because it sort of just all melts away, you know?
I mean, the orchestration was done by Todor Kobakov, who is a longtime friend who worked on my solo albums with me way back. And he's literally looks like the part of like, oh, you wouldn't happen to be like a Bulgarian composer, would you? He's like, yes, I am, at your service. So when we had the revelation that Formentera was going to be the sort of heart of the record, which was also a very weird process of kind of like psychic consensus, where I work really closely with this visual artist, Justin Broadband. We come up with all these concepts and art direction and stuff together. And he'd been listening to all the songs, like, you know, and we still weren't sure, like, the name of the album, what's the title, what's the centerpiece. And he separately from us at like the same time, it's like, it's gotta be Formentera. This is the visual, this is the idea, this is the meaning. Like he had the same revelation. But so when that happened, Jimmy was like, I hear what needs to happen. We need to anchor Formentera and Enemies of the Ocean in an orchestral piece that connects them in the center as the heart of the record. And I was like, whoa, totally. And then classic form, Jimmy's just like, great, it's called Todor. Todor's like, immediately gets it done. And then, you know, in a very short period of time, we're doing a live cast with the Budapest Art Orchestra, who actually had lunch with Howard Shore, since we're talking about film Hans Zimmer's of the world, but we've worked with Howard Shore before on film work and had lunch with him. And I mentioned that we worked with the Budapest Art Orchestra, and he was like, oh, I work with them all the time, they're great. I was like, really? What are the chances? So that was how that came together. And I know what you mean, that menacing piece, because that was Jimmy's vision, was that when Formentera ends, that you have this feeling of it's kind of like winding down and collapsing and falling apart, and then you ramp it right back up with Enemies. So it's a cool moment on the record, and it's nice actually, because that's where the vinyl cut is. So Formentera is on side A, and it all goes to the falls apart, and then the next side B starts with Enemies going. Oh, cool! Yeah,
perfect. Yeah, that and you and film composers, what, Cosmopolis? I know it's been like a decade since you guys did that right there. Like, do some of that again one day. I hope that's in you all again, some more film scoring. That's fun.
I think it's in us.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. See that come around there too. And I think I could just keep going on and on about every single track on here, because I know it all tells its own unique story. And it's so, like, I was thinking that, you know, for a lot of us, the last couple of years, so much of it, I think our brain just tries to forget, you know, to push away. Like, you know, we had those comments, it's like, oh God, did that happen? And something about this record almost helps me remember those markers, and not in a bad way. I mean that in a really good compliment, you know, like it's really, really well done. So I just can't compliment you guys enough on what you're doing here. And I really can't wait to see it live as well.
I'm glad that's translating, because that is what we talked about, was like, how do we, like, you know, again, on like being useful, like, how do we recognize it, acknowledge it, and make it a process of getting past it, not dwelling on it, You know, that's, and I'm really pleased that that's your impression. And that seems to be like the response we're getting. It's not like dragging you back in. Like, believe us, that's the last place we want to go, you know, but it's like so many things in life, you don't actually get free of them by suppressing them. You get free of them by being able to articulate them, and then you're free, you know. But what a crazy time. And so I think the fact that it's like so solitary for everyone, like, so reading a piece saying this, you know, that there is no national monument to, like, you know, the million lives and counting that have been lost in the US alone. Like, but it's because everyone got so removed from one another and things are so polarized that it doesn't feel like a collective moment. It feels like the opposite. It's like it fractured everything as opposed to being something we all went through.
It doesn't feel like being in the unity business is not a high paying business at this point, but you know what? We're going to stay in it.
That's right. That's our purpose.
Well, thank you all both so much for making the art that you make. Emily, Jimmy, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Right on. You too. Thanks so much, man.
My thanks to Emily and James. Metric, the new album is called Formentera. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Again, if you enjoyed this one, please hit that subscribe button. You'll get 3 brand new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, Red Circle, Audible, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's Facebook, Instagram, mostly on Twitter. All 3 of them, at Kyle Meredith. That's the address. I do hope you like and follow. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.